G'day and welcome to All Sports with me, your host, Sean Golding, where we talk about all sports, I guess. Before we get started, I'd like to thank you all for your questions. And we're going to start today with cricket. Christine wants to know, how does the scoring work in cricket? Well, it's quite simple, really. You score runs for the number of times the two batsmen run between the wickets. If the ball goes past the boundary rope, you get 4 runs. If it goes past on the full, you get 6 runs. And the winning team is the team that gets the most runs with the number of wickets. You've got 10 wickets with which to score the runs. And yeah. However, if you're new to cricket, you've only just started watching it, it might be a little confusing if you turn it on and Australia were batting, say, and it said England were leading by 150 runs. They're not really leading. What it is that England have been batting for a whole day. Australia have only just come in for the last 15 minutes. Sort of like Formula One, actually, in that you might turn it on and see Heikki Kovalainen winning the race. He's not really winning because he hasn't pitted yet. It's not until both sides have faced the same number of balls in limited overs cricket, so 50 or 20, or had the same number of wickets in a test match, where you really see who is the better side. She also asks how the Ashes became the Ashes, and that's an interesting story, actually, quite funny. What happened back in 1882, I think it was, before Australia was even a country, we weren't officially a country until 1901, we beat you, well, you being England, we beat England at cricket for the first time. And this was quite embarrassing for the English. We were, as they'll still remind us now, we were a bunch of convicts. We were a colony. And so for England to be beaten by a colony, they weren't too happy. And one journalist wrote in one of the newspapers a mock obituary. In affectionate remembrance of English cricket, which died today, 1882, and the name just stuck, I guess. A few years later, they actually burnt the bales of the wicket and put them in a little urn, which is now the Ashes. That is what we compete over fiercely each year. Although, even when we do win, which is most of the time, and I'm not just saying that, we have won it more times than England has. And in the last 20-something years, England has only won it twice. We never actually get to keep it. It stays in England the whole time. You guys pretend that it's too fragile to be transported. It's not really. You just make that up. Yeah, anyway, we now move on to a voice recording, a voicemail sent in by Stephen Roy, which we'll play, and then I'll answer his question after that.
Hi, Sean. I know you're looking for questions for your show, so I thought I'd try this for you. I'd like to know how much interest there is in Australia in all the major American sports, such as baseball, which is like cricket but more entertaining, or NFL football, or basketball, or hockey, ice hockey. How much interest is there in Australia, and do people actually watch American sports and take an interest and have their own team and stuff?
Overall, no. None of those American sports are really followed at all in Australia. There are a bit. All of them can be found on cable sports channels every now and then. But Australians are much more inclined to follow the British sports, your cricket, football, rugby. Contrary to what you say, cricket here is seen as baseball, but more entertaining. Basketball, Australians don't really like, a lot of Australians anyway, don't really like the whole basketball, the culture around basketball at the moment. Ice hockey, not really. Again, I have been known to dabble in it, supporting the Toronto Maple Leafs, but that mainly was a result of me having NHL 2004 on a computer, not as a result of the love of the game. NFL is the only one that really gets any mention here. Every time the Super Bowl comes around, it's always talked about. Last year especially, I think it was last year, was it the Cardinals? That might have been 2 years ago. I think it was their kicker was an ex-AFL player. And a lot of AFL players are going over there now because if you want a kicker, well, those guys kick it further than anyone else in the world. And so it is getting more known, I guess, but still not really followed. Speaking of AFL, that does lead into a question put forward by Nick. Why do so many people in Australia like AFL when the rest of the world thinks it's a stupid game? I think you'll find that a lot of people in Australia think it's a stupid game as well. It's followed religiously down in Victoria, but they are a bit strange down in Victoria anyway. Not quite as bad as Queenslanders, mind you, but still a little strange nonetheless. Back to AFL though. AFL is an interesting game, I'll give it that. Can at times be a violent game, more violent, I would argue, than rugby league is. But yeah, check it out if you don't know what it is. And if you don't know what it is, you're probably American, because it's not, I don't know how heard of AFL is over there. I know English people have heard of it. In fact, when I was in England, I actually saw an AFL match being played on TV in a pub. So they have heard of it, and they do know what it is over in England. I know that. Christine asks, though, and I assume she's talking about AFL here. She asks why there is apparently a million referees in that game. And there is a few. From memory, I think there's 5, which is more than you would have in most other sports, mainly because from end to end, an AFL field is 175 metres long, almost double what a football field is, and it's more than twice as wide as a football field as well. At its widest, it is circular, or ovular, so not always twice as wide. But yeah, so there's 3 referees running around on that, because I don't know, I think it's a bit much to ask a single referee to keep up with play when one person kicks at 50 metres and then that person kicks another 50 metres on. So they need more than one on the field. And then there's the 2 goal umpires who really don't have much of a job except to wave their hands around sillily when people score. Anyway, moving on. We have a question here from Christine. Is darts a sport? That depends, at least in my opinion, how you define a sport. If sports are something that are competed by trained athletes, you know, toned physically to perfection, then take one look at a professional darts game and you will see that no, darts is not a sport. However, I would really, really like to be able to say yes to this, because darts is played primarily in a pub. So I think it would be fantastic to be able to say to your wife or your girlfriend, you know, I'll see you later. I'm just heading out to play a bit of sport with fellas, you know? And, oh, all right then, have fun. I'll see you later. Spend the next few hours in the pub playing sport with a few drinks involved as well. I think darts is a sport purely for this reason. Please note, however, I take absolutely no responsibility for any consequences that may result in you trying this. Nick asks, is fishing a sport? And if so, what is the point of it? Alright, excuse me, I'm back. As you may have noticed, the phone just rang. Is fishing a sport? I think the same as darts, yes, it is purely for the same reason. However, I think fishing is less of a sport and more of a drinking game, in my opinion. A drinking game to see who can drink the most without falling off the boat or the rocks or the pier or the dolphin or whatever you happen to be fishing from. I think darts is more of a sport than fishing, but both are very relaxing pastimes that I would love to be able to pass off as a sport. And we'll cross now to a voicemail left by Alex Andronov.
Hi, this is Alex Andronov calling from SOFA F1 with a question for Sean for his All Sports show. Obviously, Formula One is the best sport, but if you were going to rank all of the others, which is the second best sport in the world?
Well, in my opinion, and it is just my opinion, although this is my show, so I guess mine is the only opinion that matters at the moment, the next best sport would have to be football or soccer, to allow American listeners. Yes, I'm a big fan of football, supporting Aston Villa and Sydney FC, and also Valencia as well, I guess, a bit. After that, I'm also very partial to a bit of snooker, both watching it and playing it, as well as cricket and rugby union. But I guess if Australia's beating England, then I'll support whatever sport it is. Doesn't really matter. I think we've also answered another question here. Christine asked, which is better, rugby or football? You've had my answer. Football is better. However, out of the two rugbies, rugby union is definitely a much better game than rugby league. I did come up with a bit of an analogy in regards to rugby and football. I would say that rugby is the NASCAR of football sports, whereas football would be the Formula One. But anyway, moving on though, we have another question here from Christine, and it does seem as though she's been asking most of the questions actually. How on earth did curling come about? Now, I was going to just tell you that it was invented by a bunch of Canadian farmers who only had a icy lake, a broom, and a frozen penguin to throw around. However, I then realised that penguins don't actually live in Canada, so I thought I'd better look it up. Looking at the Wikipedia page for it now, and I have to say, if 42 wasn't the answer to the ultimate question, Wikipedia would be. It is the source of all knowledge. Anyway, according to the Wikipedia page anyway, curling was actually invented in Scotland, believe it or not, back in the 1500s. I certainly wouldn't have guessed Scotland. If I was told to guess where curling came from, I would have guessed Canada or Scandinavia or somewhere like that. But yeah, curling is a truly weird game, and in my opinion, I know not everyone agrees with this, but in my opinion is reflective of the nature of the Winter Olympics. However, that said, I did remember something that happened in the Winter Olympics. I remembered it a couple of days ago, and it's not really related to curling at all, but I think I have to tell you because it's quite funny. Go to YouTube and type in Stephen Bradbury, B-R-A-D-B-U-R-Y. This happened in the 2002 Winter Olympics. Before this, Australia had never won a gold medal in the Winter Olympics, which is fair enough, I suppose. We are a nation of beaches and sand and desert and sun, not really of snow and ice. But yeah, this was our first ever gold medal in the Winter Olympics. Type in that name, watch it, and you'll see how this was. It's hilarious, it really is. It's a testament to every single sporting cliche you care to think of. You know, you have to be in it to win it. Slow and steady wins the race. Never give up. All that. Look him up. Stephen Bradbury. Watch the video. And yeah, it's pretty funny. We'll now go to the second of two voicemails left by Alex. And we'll see you after that.
Hi, this is Alex Antonov with a question for Sean. Given the current Formula One drivers, can you compare them to sports? Which ones like which sports? Is Kimi Raikkonen more like football? Is Fernando Alonso more like ice hockey? Any clues?
All right, this question is very similar to another one we've got, which is which Formula One drivers would do well at other sports. So I'll be answering both of them here, I guess. I don't know if any of you saw Fernando Alonso's theatrics in the football match they played in Monaco, but I think he'd fit, if he changed his nationality at least, he'd fit right into the Italian national team. And no, I'm not bitter. Cough, World Cup 2006. Yeah, if you don't know what I'm talking about, look it up. The first knockout round of the last World Cup. So yeah, I think he could do well there, although I'm sure Spain dive just as much. Mark Webber has proven to us in the past that four wheels at 300 kilometers an hour is much safer than two wheels at however fast you can pedal them. So I don't think he should go anywhere near that in the future. He is apparently not bad at tennis, though. Maybe he could play tennis. Kimi Raikkonen, well, he's a big fan of ice hockey, but he's not the biggest fella, so maybe he wouldn't be that good at playing it. I'm sure Heikki Kovalainen is well, he's Finnish, so he's probably a fan of ice hockey as well. However, I think he's even smaller than Kimi Räikkönen, so he shouldn't be playing that. I understand Adrian Sutil is quite tall, so maybe basketball for him. Although, I don't know, Lewis Hamilton, for some reason, seems like more of a basketball player to me. I can't really see Sutil shooting some hoops, as they say. Jenson Button makes me think of a golf player. Nico Rosberg, it doesn't matter what he's doing, as long as he's out of Formula One, because wearing a helmet can't be good for that hair. Actually, no, Jenson Button, not golf, polo. I think Jenson Button should be playing polo. And I know he's not a current Formula One driver anymore, but Nelson Piquet, I think he should be doing figure skating. No reason, except that that's the only sport I can think of where spins are actually a good thing. And yeah, I didn't cover all of them, but hopefully that has shed some light on that problem for you, Alex. Moving on, RG has a question. He wants to know why it took so long for Australia to get a professional football league system. Well, until recently at least, Australia was never that good at football. And although in Australia we do like sport a lot, we also like winning at sport. So I guess with Australia not being very good, people weren't that interested in it. We did have a semi-professional league that stopped a couple of years before the A-League started. But now the A-League is going strong. It was boosted by the fact that a couple of months after it started, Australia then qualified for the 2006 World Cup against Uruguay. First country to ever qualify for World Cup by a penalty shootout, apparently. And so that boosted the interest in it. Qualified again this year, so people are excited about football again, I guess. And it's expanded two new teams this year, probably another two next year. Well, hopefully anyway. And yeah, so that's why it's not really why we didn't have one before, but it's why we've got one now, and it's why it's going fairly strong now. RG also had another question. Why does FIFA and UEFA hate England? Now, I can't really answer that, but I can give you an example of the Confederation hating on another country. The AFC, the Asian Football Confederation. Well, Wellington Phoenix, they're a New Zealand team, but they play in the A-League because, well, everyone knows New Zealand is effectively part of Australia. But if New Zealand is not in Asia, in the Asian Confederation, but Australia is, and they were told that if they ever do qualify for the Asian Champions League, not that they will because they're a rubbish side, but if they do, then they're not allowed to enter because they're not Australian. And they also told the FFA, the Football Federation of Australia, that when Wellington Phoenix's franchise contract expires, they don't want them to renew it. They want them to be kicked out of the league, and they only want it to be an Australian league. So, okay, again, it doesn't really answer your question, but it is an example of the Confederation not liking a country. Alright, a couple of quick questions. Christine wants to know why England always do badly when she watches them. I don't think it's just when you watch them, I think it's just normal. She also wants to know how you would try and convince someone to join a synchronized swimming team. I'd say you have to get them very, very drunk before they agree to do that. Well, I know you'd have to get me very drunk before I agreed to do that. Amy wants to know why Roger Federer is so awesome. Now, I had to think about this one. He's Swiss, so that doesn't there make him particularly awesome. You know, if he was Australian or Finnish or something, you might say, well, there you go, that is why. But, no, so he plays tennis, which, well, doesn't really make him especially awesome. And his accent isn't as cool as it could be either. I mean, some Europeans, look at Kimi Räikkönen, his accent is far better than Roger Federer's. So either his awesomeness is just a mystery, or perhaps he just isn't that awesome at all. Sorry, Amy. Now, I'll save this question to last especially, because I'm hoping it might provide a segue back into the F1 chat of the rest of SidePod Radio. John Waldock wants to know about the FIA elections that are coming up. He asked, how many FIA clubs are there, i.e. how many votes total are cast in the election? And is there a golden number they need, like in America, they need 270, or is it just a majority? Now, I've had to look this one up because I didn't know. I found out there are 221 clubs in total, but that isn't as relevant because there are 132 countries represented. Each of them has two votes equally. It doesn't matter if it's America or Ethiopia. They've all got two votes. Although, as you may have noticed, 221 clubs is less than 2 times 132 because there's 264 votes total. If there's only one club representing a country, then that country gets two votes. So perhaps some of the clubs, the smaller countries, are even more powerful than the big countries. I should say each vote, they get two. One represents sport, one represents mobility. If there's two clubs in a country, one represents each. If there is more than one club representing either one of them, either sport, say there's more than one club representing sport in a country, then the vote is a majority decision between all those clubs. They have a vote to see what their vote is. And the winner is the one with the absolute majority. I guess they can't have a number because voting isn't compulsory. It's just you're eligible to do it, to vote if you are a club. So, and if you're paid to join the FIA, I imagine it's very expensive, so you may as well vote. I hope I've got that right. Someone will probably call in and say, no, you're wrong, actually, which wouldn't surprise me. But I think I got it right, as far as I know I did. I guess that brings us to the end of this show. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope it was at least a little bit educational. As always, you can leave a voicemail to folks at Side Podcast at 012128TRACK or look for Side Podcast on Skype. I can't say for certain, but I'm sure they would like to hear from you. I think I covered everyone's questions today. If I didn't, then I'm very, very sorry. But yeah, enjoy the rest of Side Pod Radio. Later.
Brilliant. Thanks for that, Sean. And thank you for not laughing at any of my stupid questions. I do think it must be possible to convince someone to join a synchronized swimming team without getting them drunk, but maybe you're right. We'll finish off this half hour with a tenuously related song. This is by Hollow Horse and it's called Run.
Shine. So shine.